Well, hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. We are talking about the power of entertainment this week, beginning with our inbox question a little later on, where John Thomas is with us to talk about kind of those romantic gestures that we all seem to get from Hollywood and their influence upon us. And we have a listener who kind of has a question about, is that even a right placement of priorities? Or shouldn't we just focus on Jesus? Why should we be focusing so much on one another? It seems a little Hollywood-ish. So we will discuss that with John Thomas. In our culture segment, we are going to be talking to Ben Davies. He's one of the leads in the movie Courageous, which comes out this weekend, the fourth film in the franchise by Sherwood Pictures. So we're very excited to hear from him. He is a very young guy. I think he's 21 years old. So we will learn from him and find out how he made this leap into Hollywood. And then our roundtable, which we'll go into right now, is with Axis, a group of young adults who deal on a regular basis with worldview issues, talking about specifically how our culture shapes our worldview. And so I'm going to be talking with them about movies and the entertainment industry in general, including lyrics, music, and all the other things that come out of that area. So that will be very exciting. This week's show is sponsored by Beyond Boundaries for better relationships. Tune into the Beyond Boundaries live worldwide webcast with Dr. John Townsend. It is on October 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And you can find out more at facebook.com/Dr. Townsend's page. So here we go with the folks from Axis. For our roundtable today, we are very pleased to welcome some new guests to the Boundless Show. We have a team of folks from Axis, and their tagline is From Apathy to Action. So we're going to be talking worldview today, and I want to introduce Megan, David, and Daniel. Welcome, y'all.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
So these are all, not that you can maybe tell it from their voices, but these are all, I'm not going to say youngsters. I'm going to say like millennials, basically, right? Y'all are in the millennial generation.
We're definitely millennials/millennials.
Okay.
that's the character.
I was going to try to lure a couple of you maybe into the bottom end of the Gen X generation so that I would not feel so bad. But apparently that's not going to happen. So I will just be the sage voice of wisdom and age here. So, okay. Well, very, very excited to have you guys here because we're very passionate about worldview at Focus on the Family. As you well know, you all came through the Focus Leadership Institute. And whether, I don't know, was that by choice or was that like your parents just saying, get on down there? Or how'd that come about?
Definitely by choice.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Against my parents' will, actually.
Wow. Okay.
And my mom told me when I was about 5 that I was coming.
So okay.
Just kind of fit when I got to college.
Okay. Awesome. So against your parents' will. They didn't want you to...
Well, I just graduated college, and the expectation was to get out there and get a job pretty quick, and I was starting to reevaluate, you know, what's next, what I want to do, what vocation am I going to have, and then I was kind of connected with FLI after that, and I said, hey, this sounds like a great place to take it. Just one more question, one more chance to say, you know, what else is there for me, and to spend a couple months out here sharpening the axe.
Well, that's always good to do. But I can imagine how they would say, you know, no, really, now it's time to get serious and just get a job. David, get a job.
Right.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll have to have them listen to last week's interview, our interview on courage and calling. That would be very, you know, good. We'll learn about vocation and calling, or we did, from Gordon. So very exciting. Well, let's go ahead and talk here because you guys, this is interesting what y'all have going on, because not only is it an experiment or a project related to worldview in general, but it's something that you guys have taken on as younger folks who really basically started a 501c3 to make all this happen. And you are going into schools, you're going into churches, you are educating young adults as well as their parents on issues surrounding worldview. And through a number of things, including the site and curriculum that you have and presentations that you do. So I guess the first question I want to ask you all is why, now I understand, okay, when you're talking, maybe we need to differentiate here between non-Christian teens and young adults and then Christian teens and young adults. But if you're going after Christian teens and young adults, let's start with them. Why is it that our worldviews are so messed up. Because there are some people out there that are going to be like, shouldn't you just like go to church and like read the Bible and figure out what you're supposed to believe on this stuff? Why are we at odds so much with what we believe and how we're living it out?
Well, there's just a lot of competition out there. We really feel like 15 to 25-year-olds are the target market for all types of advertising, and all of those advertisements are selling an idea. And so you have a culture that has become kind of bloated, oversaturated, and a little bit confused over why they believe what they believe and what they should care about, what they should desire. And we find that students are loving the wrong things. We find that many people are tricked and deceived into loving and caring about the wrong things. So that's our point. We want to come in. We want to encourage underage thinking. We want to push this idea of, like, let's move from apathy to action. Let's care about the right things. And the way that we do that is we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're not trying to do something that's, I mean, we're taking some of the best ideas out there, and we want to come from a younger voice with lots of media, lots of culture, lots of visuals, because we're reaching out to a post-literate generation and get them to engage these ideas, because they're kind of drowning in many situations.
Now, do you think that these are mostly a result of students saying, okay, I'm now presented with this different structure of a worldview, whether, say, it's like Islam, or whether it's an atheistic or a, you know, modern, postmodern worldview? Or is it, because we're going to talk about this in a little bit, kind of that cultural slide and kind of that frog in the kettle kind of thing, where all of a sudden, I really like this song, I really like this movie, and all of a sudden now I'm just embracing everything that it has to say?
It feels good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a big thing. Okay. Is it's encouraging you not to think. It's encouraging to lose your mind. I mean, the number two song right now, that's the chorus, is lose your mind. Don't think about these things, just do. Or we have a magazine, O Magazine, with Oprah, and it's just follow your intuition. Just follow your heart. So it's encouraging you not to see the big picture, but just to kind of do what feels good now. And I think that's what's dangerous with it, is it just draws you in, and it's encouraging you not to see the future. It's just all about now.
Okay. So what do you think that, say, because you guys talk to everyone from, like, I think 13 to 25 is kind of where you're really trying to hit. And of course, you know, many people will say, well, you need to start when they're like three. But okay, well, that's why we need to be talking to the parents too. But what would you say is the piece that is missing as far as really the pro worldview piece? Because, you know, if a young adult or a student doesn't come in with a solid worldview to address the onslaught of cultural influences that we have out there, what are they not being taught, whether it's in our churches or whether, I mean, because not everyone can go to the Focus Leadership Institute. So if you're not getting hit with something where you're like, oh my goodness, I've not heard this before, what's the missing piece proactively to give people an understanding?
One of the big differences that I've found in my own life is the fact that I grew up at church, and I was taught a lot of the right things, but I was never taught how to really live that out in everyday life. So I would hear about what it means to believe in God, or the concept of God, or what it means to love God, but they would never tell me how to do that. So how do I actually take being a Christian and apply it to everyday life? So when I'm thinking about media, or when I'm thinking about how to raise a family, or when I'm thinking about how to interact with my friends, how does that actually relate to who God is and what he wants in out of my life, who he wants me to be? And so that's a huge thing that I've noticed within my own experience, is just the fact that I'm looking for, okay, the definition of biblical wisdom seems to be that you know the right things, but you also live the right way. And so how do we actually live the right way? How do we take what we know, what we believe, and actually apply it to our lives? How do we love God and love others well, and not just say that we believe something, but actually apply it?
Another thing that happens in a lot of churches, or in my experience, is an over-emotional emotionalization at church. So it's almost neglecting the life of the mind, and you need to have a good balance of emotions and reason. And what I've seen in a lot of camps that I grew up in was this push for an emotional experience and an emotional commitment. But then when that feeling leaves, so does the commitment to that. And so we've seen that. I've seen it in my life and a lot of other people's lives. And another thing is just only teaching the Bible and only teaching the Christian worldview. I mean, that's great, but if you don't know what else is out there, then how can you interact with it? How can you persuade and reason and think with those people? And a lot of times people come out of this bubble, they go to a college or beyond, and they start to interact with these ideas, and they say, what was my pastor hiding from me? Mm-hmm. What was my parent? Why didn't my parents teach me about this? Were they afraid of this? Were they afraid of these ideas? And you get out there and you get slammed with some hard questions that you've never interacted with, and that leaves you pretty vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, and it seems, too, that once you hit that scene, I've always thought to myself, wow, do these people with competing worldviews just have great PR teams or what? Because what they're saying is totally savvy. And they're like, it's being said by all the cool people with like cool contexts and very well done, you know, and just and they seem fun. I want to be with the fun people, you know, so because I grew up, my background was in very much a system of line drawing. And not that my parents weren't totally legit and they weren't hypocritical at all and they loved the Lord. But it was like there were things that you did do and didn't do and you just knew what they were. And so I entered college with a very stark structure of legalism that I imposed on everyone else. And it was like, you know, if you drank and listened to Led Zeppelin, you were obviously not a believer. But if you did this and this, then you were. And, you know, not really a biblical context for that at all. So
it's kind of the opposite of David, of the emotionalism for you was more of the rules mm-hmm. and dryness of mm-hmm. your relationship with God. So there's maybe those two extremes that cause issues for young adults mm-hmm. today.
Right. You need a healthy balance. Mm-hmm. And also, meanwhile, the whole time in our experiences, even if you go to a church and you're raised with a family, a lot of times people are not fully aware of all the other messages and worldviews they're hearing just by turning on the radio or, you know, a lot of times just advertisements, mm-hmm. even on a Christian radio station, are causing you to covet. Mm-hmm. Or another time is just watching anything, any sports or anything on TV, you have all of these subversive messages just kind of slipping under the radar, and all of a sudden you're starting to believe things, but they're not really going examined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of these things because this is, you know, going to be hitting a little bit close to home because some of us love our hip hop, okay? So, but I'm willing to put this on the table and have us start talking about some of the things that are out there currently in the entertainment world and in our culture. And you guys have some very specific examples, you know, to bring up as far as things that, you know, this is the standard young adult scenario. It's a Friday night and it's everyone like just, hey, I just checked on, you know, Fandango and I've looked up the latest movie and here's what's playing tonight and let's just all go to it. And it's just kind of everyone chimes in and says, okay, and then you're in the theater and there's, you know, some people may leave the theater and say, maybe that wasn't the best thing to go see, but it just seems to be this pass that everyone gives and then they start giving all these justifications for, well, you know, it was in a cultural context or it's an art film or it's whatever, and then everyone has their different views on things. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what do you guys see as far as, give a great example here of what is pervasively showing up in, let's maybe start with movies, and how this context starts applying.
I mean, we could talk about Twilight a little bit. Yes, it's a little bit old, the first one, the first film.
The new
one's coming out this fall, the mm-hmm. first half of the final book, I guess you could say. So there will be
because you can never say too much about vampires. That's
no,
what I
not
think.
At all.
There's,
I mean,
because they don't die. So I mean, honestly, this could go on forever.
It's true. But you look at the ideas behind Twilight, and yes, okay, it's sweet. There's this loving relationship, but you have, I mean, kind of in the context of it, you have a 109-year-old dead man in love with a 17-year-old girl. They fall in love in 2 weeks, and now they can't live without each other. Mm-hmm. So the story is cute, I guess you could say. But when you look at the context of it and you look at where it's going, you look at the specific scenes. I mean, you look at the whole context of the films, but you look at specific scenes where one character is like, I cannot live without you, or I don't even want my soul unless you're with me. Mm-hmm. So we're willing, as a culture, we're getting to a point where we're willing to give up not only our lives, but our souls to be with just another human being, mm-hmm. or in this case, a vampire. Mm-hmm.
Or you just kind of view it's, you know, with Twilight, you're a half a person looking for another half of a person. And then you finally, when you're with them, you're whole. Mm-hmm. But biblically, you're supposed to find your completeness in Christ and be mm-hmm. a whole person there, meeting another person who is satisfied in Christ. So 1 + 1 = 1. Mm-hmm. So it's an entirely different form of math. And so you have this relationship, this idea that you're supposed to be complete and find your full satisfaction in another human being. Mm-hmm. Or even with The Bachelorette on TV, at least multiple times you have the girls choosing because she says, I follow my heart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so throughout, and this is kind of a big picture, if you zoom up and look at everything, it's this idea of just be authentic to yourself. Mm-hmm. Be authentic to yourself and follow your heart. What if you're authentically broken? What if you have authentically poor judgment? Mm-hmm. Are you still supposed to cling to this authenticity? And it's often this kind of hyper value mm-hmm. in our culture, in a culture where tolerance has become number one, authenticity is right there next to it. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that through Glee. You can see that through The Bachelorette. You can see that through some of Lady Gaga's music. You can see that through Twilight. Mm-hmm. It's just be true to yourself. What happens if being true to yourself is you're yeah. evil?
Well, and for example, like with The Bachelorette, I mean, one of the things that's so concerning about that show is, and very anti-Boundless, is that the entire relationship is artificially played out without any kind of input from older, wiser people, like mentor type people. Even Chris, when he was supposed to, like last season, speak into Ashley's life about Bentley, I mean, it's like he didn't even give her any info. Like, he clearly knew that this guy was an idiot, but he wasn't giving her that. So it was the whole drama of how this plays out with, like, oh my goodness, is she going to choose this guy? Well, yeah, she is, because all she has is false information. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's not a healthy dynamic for understanding mm-hmm. who these people are.
And I think there's another issue with that, especially when it comes to reality TV shows. Even TV shows that are written to look like reality, is you have this unrealistic reality TV show. Nowhere in life will you be on camera, sent to the Virgin Islands for an entire week with your mm-hmm. own makeup team, costume, wardrobe, mm-hmm. whatever it might be. And then you get to go on these great dates and these fantastic meals and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not real.
Mm-hmm. And so, you don't even have to pay for them. You yeah. get all these amazing dates and you don't even have to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't fall in love in a situation like that?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems a little artificial. Okay. So, but now if we look at like The Bachelorette or some of the things that play out there, at least these people, other than most of them, you know, looking like some form of model, but beyond that, they kind of come across as people that, oh, you kind of like them. You kind of get to know them. You feel like you're either on their side or not on their side. But let's switch over to the music industry a little bit here and talk about some of the things that are playing out in lyrics in popular songs, because I know you guys threw out a couple potential songs that we could talk about. And there, within these song lyrics, there's just like full-on craziness going on. Like, this is something right. that, and even though I love this genre of music, I find myself very torn, because I either have to do massive radio edits where you don't even hear every fourth word because they're bleeping it out, or you really start looking at the lyrics and you're like, there is nothing redeeming about this at all. And it doesn't even share like my experience. Like Kesha, for example, her song, We Are Who We Are. There is nothing reflected in that song that is even remotely close to anything I've ever experienced. What is up with all the, first of all, what's up with all these women putting glitter on their eyes? I don't know. Where do you get this glitter? Who is putting all this glitter on? Because Katy Perry's putting glitter on, Kesha's putting glitter on, and they're just like hanging out in clubs and getting drunk. What do you guys have to say about that?
I have no idea about the glitter. I wish I could help you on that, Lisa.
It because it's probably keeping like Hobby Lobby in business. Ooh, that's what I got
to
say.
Taking it to the next level. Yeah. With the song We Are Who We Are, again, it's this idea of authenticity. Just mm-hmm. be who you are and then celebrate that to the fact where your body goes numb. Mm-hmm. And hey, maybe you have Jesus on your necklace, which she throws in there a couple of times. Mm-hmm. It's just almost this.
It's actually
good...
a necklace.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry, you got to add that syllable. Mm-hmm. I left it out. It's a good luck charm. And I don't want people to listen to this thing that we're a bunch of haters. Mm-hmm. The goal is saying, if we don't think clearly about these things, we're going to miss out on a life that flourishes. Mm-hmm. We're going to miss out on a life that is satisfying, mm-hmm. that matches reality, that embraces it to its fullness. So we're being fed saccharine when we could be going after something that's really sweet and that's really satisfying, something that feels temporarily good but has no lasting nutrition. There's a quote that I love, and I'm going to kind of bend it a little bit, but it says, TV is the chewing gum of the mind. Hmm. And a lot of this pop culture can become the chewing gum of the mind. Man, it tastes great. It gives you something to do. But where's the nutrition? Hmm. Where's the nutrition? Mm-hmm. So I think that happens with We Are Who We Are. Is again, it's affirming this idea of being authentic, but authentic to a fallen nature.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot like LMFAO's new song, Party Rock Anthem, because you listen to that song and it's got this great beat. It's really exciting. If you watch the music video, they have these amazing breakdancers at the end. I mean, it's so popular, even Jesus makes an appearance at the end. So
he's always where the party is.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're watching this video and it's really exciting and it sounds like one of those feel-good summer songs. But then when you start pulling the lyrics apart, you start seeing things like, and we're going to make you lose your mind. Mm-hmm. Well, what does it mean to lose your mind? Mm-hmm. Does it mean you just go by feelings and just do whatever feels right? Or does it mean, like, what happens if you lose your mind and that means that because this is what I want to do because it feels right, it violates you in some way, mm-hmm. or it violates someone else. And so that's the idea. So it sounds good. It sounds a lot of fun. But then when you start looking at it and say, okay, what does it mean to lose your mind and go out and just be crazy and do whatever feels right? Well, all of a sudden there's some consequences that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how on that song, a lot of women use it kind of as a party anthem and stuff and do it like, you know, girls' night. It's like, hey, let's go hang out, ladies, and stuff. And like the song is so anti-women. I mean, I think one of the lyrics is, I'm running through hoes like Drano. That's not okay. I mean, but yeah. All the women are like, woo, you know? So it's silly, you know, when you start. And again, it's another example of a song that's like, is this really people's experience or is this something they're aspiring to? Because it just seems so counter to anything that is remotely normal, like hanging out in clubs. And, you know, we could talk about Katy Perry's song, you know, Last Friday Night. It's like, really, every Friday night people are just in clubs getting drunk and not being responsible for their behavior? I get
13-year-olds.
Okay.
Because that's who Katy Perry, I mean, her in the music video, she's Kathy Beth Terry, who in a previous kind of YouTube video says, hey, I'm 13 years old. I just got a Facebook. You have Rebecca Black in there. She's 14. Mm-hmm. And here they are. What's the goal? Is to not even remember what happened because you blacked out. Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours, his name's John Stone Street, and his radio show, The Point, he says, he even poses the question, is this child abuse? Mm-hmm. Is this child abuse to have a 14-year-old engaging in these type of sexual and drug and alcohol-related things unsupervised? I mean, is that a good thing? Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say no, it's a catastrophic thing.
And then you have the parents come in at the end, and what do they say? They're like, oh, we invented Friday night. So it's this whole idea of not only are they losing their mind, going out, having fun, doing whatever they want to do, but then the parents are like, well, I guess that's just a part of life at that point.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting about studying worldviews is the fact that it's not about Christianity and non-Christianity, but it's really, I mean, if it's spiritualism or naturalism, of it's one thing that builds on the next. So if you don't believe there's a God, it's going to influence what you do on a Friday night or how you believe what your purpose is in life or don't believe there's a purpose. Why not go out and party? It's not just the Bible says this or doesn't say that. It has their whole worldview influences how they live.
Right. And the difference between knowing about God, kind of that classic youth group scenario of just show up at your youth group and go through a 15-minute little session of some kind of teaching, but then you just go out and live your life the way you want to, and what it looks like to actually experience God and have him in your life in a supernatural way. I mean, then you're going to start being transformed. And so I think that's maybe where we're not connecting, I think, with the youth and with young adults in really understanding what that looks like. Like, how does this translate to not have the list of do's and don'ts, but at the same time to experientially, if we're saying, as Daniel said, what does it look like to love God and to love others? Well, that's going to naturally have an overflowing effect into the way you ultimately live your life.
Yeah, so if you see it as a list of no's, you're missing out. You should see it as a giant yes. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to say, what are we saying yes to in a big way? Are we saying yes to flourishing? Mm-hmm. And I keep using that word because I just think that kind of encapsulates this idea of wholeness, of really having a life that is integrated, has integrity. And then you start seeing all these other things and you say, well, that would fracture. Mm-hmm. That would break. That would be fun now. Mm-hmm. But even though sin is entertaining, sin should never be entertainment. Mm-hmm. And if we really see this is going to have some huge effects for my life down the line, if I'm a 13-year-old partying and wake up with a stranger in my bed, there's going to be some consequences to that action.
Yeah. So what would you guys say are some of the questions then that teens, college students, young adults need to be asking? Because if you, and I want to throw this out just so people know, if you guys go to axisworldview.org, this is where you can kind of learn about Axis and what they have going on. You guys have a couple great intros to things that you do, presentations that you do, the grid, and then one called Threads. And what are you encouraging folks to start asking themselves to see? Even, I mean, maybe there needs to be some kind of worldview litmus test. Like, am I a complete disaster? Where am I? Check A or B on the scale. You know, I mean, I don't know. Just maybe some people are just not even understanding what they know or don't know.
Well, I say a big question that we ask, it's our thesis. We say the issue is not unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. The smartest person you know has unanswered questions. Everybody has unanswered questions. We say the issue is unquestioned answers. Mm-hmm. What we've assumed to be true, but we haven't said why. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great. Mm-hmm. It's great to ask questions. Mm-hmm. So many times in American Christianity, there's this virtue of childlike faith. Just believe, just accept it blindly, and you're good to go. Just say that you got it. Well, the problem is, if you look through Scripture, you can't find childlike faith or faith like a child. Mm-hmm. That Scripture, when Jesus is talking about in Matthew 18, is actually encouraging childlike humility. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's encouraging us to think like a child. Rather, we should grow up mm-hmm. and move past childlike things yeah. and desire bigger things in life. So one thing we do is
1 Corinthians 13, you know. Paul wasn't saying like, you know, oh yeah, I thought like a child, I talked like a child, so I'm still there.
Like, wahoo, look at me.
That's how I became an apostle. Yeah.
So one of our biggest pushes is, and I'll tell you a story, I was on an airplane and this girl, she's covered in tattoos and piercings, we had a great conversation, and she hated TV. I kind of can be a hater sometimes when it comes to TV too. I'm like, you know, maybe we could be doing something better. She says, imagine if you walked into a room and saw someone staring at a wall like they stare at a TV screen. You think that person is crazy. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we talk about with students is just saying, hey, can you peel yourself away from that rectangle? Mm-hmm. I mean, a study shows that we spend 4 hours and 54 minutes with TV and movies and 2.5 hours of music and 1.5 hours with computers and 1 hour and 13 minutes with video games, you know, and 40 minutes with print every day. Mm-hmm. That's more than a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So what if we were just to peel ourselves away from that and invest in some relationships with real people instead of just with a rectangle or with a screen? So that's one thing we encourage. Mm-hmm. Another thing is just peeling back the layers and saying, what are they saying? Mm-hmm. Is this who I want to be? Is this what I want to care about? And so some of our unquestioned answers in our first year program, mm-hmm. we look at the questions of reality or origin or identity or ethics or purpose or death. And we say, what's being told us through these movies and these songs about these questions, especially mm-hmm. with identity. Mm-hmm. I mean, that can be a huge one. We kind of brought that up a lot. I'm going back to authenticity here mm-hmm. again. It's saying be authentic, mm-hmm. but it's excluding this idea of a fallen nature. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to be authentic, we want to be authentic to a redeemed, a reconciled, a restored nature that Christ is in us, the new self. So that would be a big question and a big thing we challenge is say, let's think about it. Mm-hmm. Let's think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's almost like relativity then becomes key, because it's, you don't want to question the answers. You don't want to invest the time in doing it, first of all, and you're afraid of what you may find out. So it's better to just say, you know, we are who we are, and if you want to be who you are, then that's okay. And then just somehow figure it all out, or live, you know, just live and love. And you just hear all these random things that ultimately don't give any kind of framework for what actually may be best and maybe God's design in that sense. So it seems.
Yeah, and you have to ask the question, what do you really want too? Because if you really want to find God, if you really want to have a relationship with Jesus, if you really want him to impact the way that you impact the world, the way you think and all that, then asking these questions is a good thing, because it helps you see who you really are and who you really desire to be like, which is Christ. But at the same time, there's the other side, which is, do you really want to be a Christian? Do you really want this to be a part of your life? Or are you just doing this for some other reason, either because a mentor in your life thinks that it's good for you, or you have friends that are Christians or whatever? Because a lot of the examples that we talk about are, there's a lot of talent and a lot of skill. You know, LMFAO's song is really good. Pitbull's song is really good. They mm-hmm. sound really good. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talent behind
the songs. He did take his
songs.
Life from negative to positive. Right. So that kind of makes me want to support him. But yeah, then the rest of the song, it's not the best.
Yeah, exactly. No. And that's the thing is they all sound really good. These examples are all, you know, it sounds like something that we want. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the biggest questions that I have to ask myself all the time, which is, do you really want Jesus? Do you mm-hmm. really want God? Do you really want him to be a part of your life? Or are you looking for an excuse so that you can walk away and just enjoy yourself and lose your mind and just be who you want to be?
Okay. So you guys are doing this full time. So we need some evidence here as we kind of wrap. What for you guys personally have been game changers? So if you look at yourself, say 10 years ago, and maybe some things, some, you know, perspectives, thoughts, habits, whatever, what for you in examining scripture and in really getting on this understanding and bandwagon of, wow, this is like some real stuff that actually affects, it's going to transform my life. How have you changed?
I think I just started asking a lot of questions. I always had. I was never the just believe it or just have faith. I said, mm-hmm. no, give me evidence for why I should believe this. And I think in our culture today, we still do that. No, I am the teacher. I am the pastor. I am the parent. Therefore, I teach you truth. Just believe it. Don't ask questions. It's okay to ask questions, but ask them well. Ask them in love. But I think students just want the answers because that's all we've ever been taught. We had a student last semester, I believe it was. We were asking some very strong questions, just saying, you know, why do you believe what you believe? You believe in God. Give me evidence. And she was upset with us. And she just said, can't you just give me the answer? Mm-hmm. And I think we've lost that questioning spirit. You know, you've got your 2-year-old niece that says, why? Mm-hmm. Why have we lost that? Because we need to be asking really good questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what changed it for me, was just I wanted to ask questions, but I needed to know how to ask the right questions in the right way. Hmm. And so that completely changed everything for me just 5 years ago.
Hmm. For me, I had to, and this is going to be kind of a cerebral answer, but I'd rather have doubt than a false sense of certainty. I'd rather have, and that, I don't know if I'd rather have doubt anytime, but instead of a false sense of forced certainty, I don't think that's healthy. And so to begin to examine and to begin to peel back the layers and say, why do I think this? Why do I believe it's true? Not just because someone said I had to, has been huge for me. It's been very liberating, because it's not doubt that's the issue. It's your attitude toward that doubt. And if you're just going to be apathetic towards you, that doubt will eat you alive like cancer. Mm-hmm. But if you allow that doubt to provoke you to pursue the answers, to pursue God, and if you're okay having this vantage point of humility, understanding you may not understand everything, but where is the evidence leading me? That was, man, talk about a relief. Talk about a relief. And then another one that's big is just saying, with all the music in this movies, is it poisoning me? Or is it feeding me? Is it nutritious? Or is it caustic? Mm-hmm. Is it hurting me? So that was a huge one for me.
Well, for me, I grew up a lot like you, Lisa, and I had a very, very legalistic background. Grew up in Christian school, going to church, Christian family. And so when I went to graduate to college, I was probably the best Christian ever. Like, most likely...
I was the best, but you could be the second best, whatever.
Okay, I'll be second best.
Silver medal's not that bad. Yeah. just...
Top five, for sure.
Okay, top five, we'll give you that.
And so, when I go to college, first of all, it was the first time that I went to a secular school. So I went from Christian school into secular school, and so I was bringing the light. I was the light, in mm-hmm. essence. And so I go with all of this legalism or whatever, and I go into college, and I get involved in a campus ministry, and there's some people that believe different things than I do, but still say that they're a Christian. And when I look at their lives, they really look like a Christian, and they really are living out a passion for God and a love for God, and yet they have some differences of opinion on certain things. And so all of a sudden, I get I started to become this like golem-like creature where there's like two Daniels. Mm. And I'm like, all right, here's the Daniel that was in love with God or whatever and had that false sense of certainty like David was talking about. And then there was the other Daniel that was like this, ah, but is that really true? You know, my precious, which of course my precious was my legalism. And so all of a sudden my feelings about God started to change because I felt really close to God before when I was caught up in, all right, I'm pleasing God, I'm keeping God happy, and yet there was no real relationship there. And so as we started asking the questions and looking at it, all of a sudden I realized that I didn't have a relationship. It wasn't a relationship. It was, here's a list of rules to try to keep this big God happy. And because of that, that feeling, that emotion that goes along with relationship wasn't there either. It instead of having this love relationship, it was all right, keep him happy and keep myself from being stained by the world. And so all of a sudden I ended up in a campus ministry without any friends because I was telling them why they were wrong. And then I found out I was wrong about a couple things. And that's really hard when you think you've got it all figured out and all of a sudden you have these questions that you're asking and realizing that you're wrong about some things, all of a sudden that's a hard place to be. And talk about feeling like God's presence was nowhere near me at that point. I felt like I was completely lost. And so as I was able to start asking these questions and look at what I really believed, what was really true based on scripture, based on just who God was, all of a sudden God started bringing me into this love relationship with him. And then he started showing me what it means to be genuine and what it really means to be authentic, which is to love him with everything and to go out and actually love others the way that he loved us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking with a non-Christian earlier this week, and he was mentioning that, you know, he's interested in spiritual things and he's seeking and he's doing this and he's doing that. And he said, you know, what I'm really interested in is, you know, I love talking about science and I love all the intricacies of creationism versus evolution. And I love talking about medicine and what they have going on there. And I love studying the abortion debate and why people do, you know. And I was like, okay, look, I said, that is all well and good. And I gave him some resources for checking into that. But I said, until you start examining the claims of Christ, you're not going to get close to Christianity. I mean, you need to understand who Jesus is and what he said and what, you know, who you are in relation to him. And I think we often get caught up, kind of like what you guys were saying, in all these little extracurricular activities of trying to parse out different beliefs of different things. And I think it's true whether you're an unbeliever trying to understand Christianity or whether you're a believer trying to get into a relationship or get closer to the Lord or whatever, until you go, Martha and I were just talking about this yesterday, if you want to know something about something, go to the source. And so until you get closer to the source, it's just, you know, you're just talking around random people's opinions and you're just in these outer concentric circles that ultimately aren't going to get you the answers you need. So I think that's big.
And as we kind of conclude some thoughts about media, music, movies, thinking well, one final thought that has been huge for me is thinking, because I'm a musician. I've played drums for the past 14 years. I love music. I love jamming. I love just being with friends, listening to music. The biggest book in the Bible is all about music. The book of Psalms, it's giant, and it's all about poetry and music and the human experience and who God is. And I think one of the biggest things for me, Lisa, is the very first verse, very first chapter, it tells us how to listen to music. And it says, "Blessed is a man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night." And the idea behind this is music and movies and all of this different type of media, those are counselors. And how are they counseling you? Are they counseling you to be wicked? Are they counseling you to be lazy? Are they counseling you to love the wrong things? Well, if they are, you need to reevaluate what your counselors are counseling you to do. And then it says, delight in the law of the Lord, and not in a list of no's, but in a giant yes. A giant yes that says, this is the way to go, to flourish, to be satisfied, to find true life and true meaning and true significance. So I think that is huge, especially biggest book in the Bible, music. First verse, first chapter, this is how you listen to it. Mm-hmm. What are your counselors? Mm-hmm. What are they counseling you to do?
And if they are counselors, then you can't use that excuse, because I hear this so often from people of, oh, it's just my way to check out. It's just my way to, well, you know, first of all, should you be checking out? I don't think that's okay either. But really, it's not. You are giving your allegiance. You're giving your time. You're giving your attention to something. And we all will for our 70 plus years that we have on the earth. And so what is that going to look like? You know, so I think that's good. All right, y'all, make sure that you check out these folks, David, Daniel, and Megan, at accessworldview.org. You can learn all about the great stuff that they're doing, the programs that they have, the curriculum that they have, the way that they're busting into schools and doing a lot of fun stuff, getting to know young adults and building relationships with them in the process of all of this.
We'd love to come to your church. We'd love to come to your school. So if you have someone who's influential at that you know, or maybe you are, send them to our website. That's Axis, A-X-I-S, Worldview. .org. Watch our 2-minute video on the front page. It'll give you a great overview about why we exist. We'd love to be influential with you and in your community.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for being part of this.
When I lose my way and I forget my name, remind me who I am. In the mirror, all I see is who I don't want to be. Remind me who I am. In the loneliest places, when I can't remember what grace is. Tell me once again who I am to you, who I am to you. Tell me lest I forget who I am to you, that I belong.
Hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am talking to Ben Davies. Ben, for those of you who don't know, is one of the stars of the movie Courageous, which opens this weekend, and we know many of you are planning on going to see it. It is the fourth film in the franchise by the guys at Sherwood Baptist and Sherwood Pictures, so we're very excited. We've talked to them before, to the Kendricks and to Jim McBride, and just learned about how they even got into this whole movie-making business, and you know, Fireproof was their most recent film, and now Courageous is coming out, and they're expecting it to even be, you know, to have even more of a reach and more people show up in theaters to see it. So, Ben, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is kind of fun to talk to you because, you know, I mentioned we've talked to the other guys in the past, but they're not, you know, no offense to them, but they're not totally in our demographic. bless their hearts. They're also great. We love them. But you are, in fact, we were just talking before we started taping, you are currently at college. Tell us just what do you have going on today? Because you obviously are fitting this interview in, but what's kind of happening here with the school year?
Well, I actually just got done with art appreciation class, and I'm waiting to go into the cafeteria to get something to eat right now. But luckily, I had some time where I could talk to you guys. And yeah, you're right. It's interesting when I was hanging out with the cast down there for Courageous. I was the youngest guy there by 10 years. My closest friend was 32, and everyone was married with kids. So,
yeah.
But it was great to hang out with those guys. You know, they're fantastic people and great mentors that I was fortunate to be around for those 2 months.
Yeah, that's cool. And you're what? You're like 21 now?
I actually just turned 22.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
You're just aging before our eyes. So, no, that's cool. I want to just talk a little bit as we get started here about your experience getting involved with this film, because I know it kind of involved an injury, and which was initially a major bummer and probably is still a bummer. But you're a decathlete? Is that kind of what you do? You did track and field starting out? In high school a lot?
Yeah, I did the decathlon and javelin. And, yeah, how I got into it was when I was younger, I did print work, commercials, that sort of thing, because my mom was into entertainment, and my dad loved athletics, so I was also training with him as I was growing up. And then when I was in high school, the Lord was really blessing me in athletics, and I knew I wanted to, you know, use that to go to the next level and that sort of thing. And I was the national champion and record holder in the decathlon for high school. And I was the national champion in the javelin. So I was really excited about that, and that was kind of my platform for ministry, and that's, you know, where I had all my friends and that sort of thing. It was great. And then I started having problems with injuries and just situations like that where it just wasn't working out. I was having setbacks. It was really frustrating for me because I've never really dealt with that. But after I had a surgery on my right shoulder, I got a call from my agent in Nashville, Advantage Miles and Talent, and they were like, "Ben, do you have time to go on an audition? I know you're probably slammed this time of the year, but, you know, we thought we'd ask." And I was like, "Yeah, actually, I've got 6 months where, you know, coaches don't care what I'm doing. So I'd love to go down there and check it out." And so I drove down to Albany and auditioned in the Sling for the role. And they're like, "Ben, are you going to be okay to do this? Because, you know, you're going to have to do stunts and shoot and, like, you know, get tackled." And I was like, "You know, if I'm supposed to do this film, the Lord's going to heal my shoulder. I'll be fine. So don't let that hold you guys back." And then fortunately, a couple weeks later, they called me and told me I booked the role.
Wow, that's awesome. So you actually, basically what we're talking about here is you got the role of David Thompson, who's kind of the rookie on a team of police officers. These four guys, especially the story centers around these four guys who are grappling with everything from their professional lives and how they work together as a team on the job, but also with their individual stories going on at home. I saw the screener way back in the day. Oh my goodness, it was before you guys had the music in it. It was before you had sound effects. It was before. So I'm looking forward to seeing it in its final glory in the theater and hoping to bring some friends along with me. Yeah, I think you guys had patched in all kinds of soundtrack pieces from like other existing films. So yeah, it was kind of interesting when I saw it originally. But so you're David Thompson. You're a young guy in the film, like I said, who's kind of the rookie character. Was there anything with that character specifically that you could identify with?
Yeah, it was fun because, you know, like you said, David was the rookie cop and that sort of thing. He was also an athlete. He talks about being a ball player in college and part of the film. And I'd been around athletes for a while, and I know the kind of pressures that go along with that, the lifestyle that's kind of expected of you and forced upon you and that sort of thing. And David has to deal with a lot of issues in the film that kind of involve that, you know, making mistakes and having to deal with things and really having to man up at some point. And so it was really interesting for me to play that because, you know, I'm not in a situation right now where because the film is about being a father, and I'm not in a situation where I'm a father figure myself, but it was great to be down there to be mentored by Ken Bevel, who also mentors my character in the movie, you know, as someone who I aspire to be like one day when I'm a father myself, hopefully. And
yeah,
playing the role, it was really exciting because I love doing action stuff, and David was a fun character who gets to, you know, shoot and take down gang members and stuff, so it was a blast.
So what that does, you know, prompt me to ask, what was your favorite scene in the film to shoot?
definitely the shootout scene when I actually, you get to go off book. Like, there's no script saying, "Get down, like, I'm going to shoot," you know, you just kind of make it out. You just, like, get a gun, and you just start shooting blank bullets at a car, and, you know, I'm just, like, rolling around, getting all hyped up, and it was great to just kind of cut loose and not be as serious as I am in some of the film, and it was great doing, like, the last shootout was probably the most fun I had, but, you know, since I was having so much fun with my gun, I had someone in charge of taking it away from me as soon as the camera was off.
Before you got too crazy. So you, in this scene, actually, there's a piece of it that shows up, a good portion of it that shows up in the trailer as well, so I don't think I'm giving anything away, but I like that where someone's, like, busting out of a door or out of a house, and they kind of, you turn around and you see them come, and you're basically tackled. Like, did you fall onto a mattress for that, or how did they work that out for you?
Yeah, that was so funny, because the Kendricks are great guys. You know, they really want to protect everybody, and they knew I had that shoulder surgery, like, 2 months before. So they were trying to stage this thing and making it as safe as possible, and faking it with, like, you know, him hitting the ground first and then touching me, and they're like, "You know, this just looks really fake on camera. We don't know how we're going to do this." And I asked what's his name? I think his name's Robert. He was playing the gang member. I was like, "Man, did you ever play football in high school?" And he was like, "Yeah." I was like, "You jumped down there and you hit me like you're playing football so we can get this thing on tape." And there was a pad behind me, but I was like, "Hey, guys, let's go one more time and see if this works." Like, "All right, we'll try one more time." So get back in there, and he just, like, hits me for real this time. And I land on the mat. And I'm like, "That was perfect. We'll use that one." So,
oh, my goodness.
It was a lot of fun doing that stuff.
Meanwhile, you have to set up another shoulder surgery and get going on that after. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, that's good. Okay, now this is one of those movies, and I think a lot of people, when they think of movies, they're like, okay, either it's going to be the guys are going to be interested in it if it's massive action or war or just blowing things up or whatever. And then otherwise, it's just some kind of storyline and guys have to go because either their wives or girlfriends make them go. So this is this is kind of different in that it's a movie that has a lot of action in it, obviously, because of the storyline, but it has a very real message for men. And what do you think, I mean, how would you say this movie especially resonates with men and you as a guy?
Well, I mean, I think any guy that goes to see a movie goes to be entertained. And I can tell you from, I mean, I've seen it multiple times and I was, you know, it is interesting, exciting, and challenging from beginning to end. I mean, you the movie ends with you wanting more and not wanting it to end, really. Mm-hmm. And there's scenes, you know, if you want to be watching an action movie, you can watch that. There's a lot of comedy in there with Robert Amaya. It's hilarious. He's one of my best friends in the set. And he's got a lot of really hilarious scenes. So, I mean, if you're a guy and you want to be entertained, then go see that movie. And the Kendricks don't make films just to make films. They make movies to change their lives. And so it's not just an entertainment factor. It's going to probably be a lot more for you than just, you know, enjoying that 2 hours. It might change the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah, because there are some very real challenges given in the movie. And I know that guys really respond to challenge, especially from other men. We talk about that a lot here at Boundless. What would you say, because you're a young guy, Ben, and you're talking to guys on this show who many of them are young and single and probably aren't like, well, you know, I don't have a family. What do I need to learn from this? What would you say about this movie is important for guys where you are as far as picking up this challenge that like Alex Kendrick's character throws down and just what happens throughout the film unfolding in these stories?
I would say, I mean, to people my age and my demographic, I mean, it's never too soon to really answer the call of who you're supposed to be. And I feel like in the film, I get mentored by Ken Bevel, and he really challenges me to man up and take hold of my responsibilities and be the person that the Lord's called me to be. And it's never too soon to impact someone's life either. I mean, in the movie, it's not just fathers that impact fathers. It's also mentors that impacted other people's lives. There's people around you that look up to you that you may not know, you know, even your circle of friends or, you know, younger brother or whatever. You're constantly setting an example and leaving a legacy behind you. And I think this film really is encouraging and is challenging for people to step up and be more courageous, like in all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. Did it give you a vision at all, because this is something else that we're passionate about here at Boundless, did it give you a vision for what marriage and family can be, even as it plays out in your own story eventually, for what you're hoping for?
Yeah, it really, and I was so fortunate to grow up in a great family with a great dad to look up to, but also being on the set, like the Kendricks, it's not just something that they preach, you know, or something that they wrote in a script that's a good idea. I was able to watch men like Kevin Downs and Alex Kendrick live these principles out day in and day out with their families that I saw them interacting with on set. And so I had great people to look up to, like great mentors that I, you know, like I said before, like I aspire to be like one day when I hopefully have a family. And it was great that I was able to see examples like that lived out in a real way. So, yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. So what do you do when you are not in school or you're not making movies or you're not competing in some kind of sport? What else do you do? Are you just like a normal person? Because it doesn't really seem like it. Seems like you always have some gig going on.
Yeah. It's been super busy. When I'm still training, I'm still doing track and field. Still doing my shoulder's healed up to where I can still compete. I'm actually at school with my brother. He also goes to Stanford. So, I mean, when I do have time to have a social life, you know, I love just like hanging out with the guys and, you know, doing intramural stuff and, you know, going out and having a good time. I get some great people here. So it's been super hectic with the film coming out, but it's going to be a blast, and I look forward to going to all the premieres and hanging out with everybody.
Yeah.
Once I just ride off this wave, it's going to be a lot more chill, I'm sure.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what are your plans for this weekend then? Where are you going to be spending opening weekend?
My goodness. It's going to be driving up to Nashville Thursday night after practice, and then my dad's driving me. We have a premiere in like a pre-screening for the very, very last day in Nashville, and then my dad's driving me back to school at 4 a.m. I'm going to get here at like 8. I have 3 tests tomorrow, and then all my friends here, my brother hasn't seen it yet. We're all going to go see the movie tonight. We already have like a screening in Birmingham, and then I leave again to go to the premiere like on Sunday, and then we'll be at Atlanta on Saturday. It's going to be nuts. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just praying for the best.
That is totally nuts. What's up with your brother? He hasn't seen it yet. What's his problem?
They don't have too many screenings like around, I guess, where he was. So,
oh, okay.
He hasn't been able to go down there for the premieres or anything like that. He was kind of busy just his freshman year, so he was busy getting ready for Stanford.
Okay.
But he'll like it. He's been really excited about it.
I thought he was just holding out on you so that you don't get a big head to be like, I don't need to see your movie yet. I don't need to see that. Okay. Well, cool. Very fun talking to you, Ben. The movie is Courageous. It is opening this weekend. Make sure that you check it out in a theater near you. And as I say with every one of these films, you have to go opening weekend because that determines box office success. So get your friends, get your family, get everyone that you know and go and see this film, especially you guys. Make sure that you guys are really in support of this and taking your friends and really starting some great discussions, I think, off of it. For more information, make sure that you check out CourageousTheMovie.com. That is the website where you'll get all the info on box office, where it's playing, trailer. You can check out the trailer. You can send info to other folks and make sure that they have the scoop. And you can certainly get a glimpse into Ben Davies and his character, David Thompson, through that site as well. So, Ben, such a privilege talking to you. I will let you get back to studying because you need to do well on those tests. And what, you know, and as you get something to eat too, you know, go ahead and get some lunch. We'll let you do that.
Appreciate it.
Great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Hold on. Is this really the life I'm living? 'Cause I don't feel like I deserve it. Every day that I wake, every breath that I take, you've given. So right here, right now, while the sun
everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I'm very privileged to have John Thomas on the phone. John, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thanks, Lisa. How are you?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing very well. Good to always connect with you. And of course, we do via print, too, in your Boundless Answers column. But, you know, we get to hear your voice and prove to ourselves that you're actually real.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that's good. Well, we've got a question here for you from one of our female listeners. And she wants to know, she says, I think a lot about what Christ-centered relationships should look like. One thing that bothers me is when a guy will do something romantic for his girlfriend, such as write her name in the sand or drive to her house just to leave a note by her door. I'm concerned that rather than the relationship being about the two of them glorifying God, it's about him glorifying her. Is there any validity to my concerns? And if so, do you have any advice for determining where that line is and how to avoid it?
Good question. I will say every situation is going to be different. Yes, that could be being done, and it could be glorifying the girl, and it could be all out of whack. And he could be placing her on a pedestal, and, you know, it's all messed up. It's all about Hollywood romance. And I would say, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it is wrong. But the other side of that is, no, it's not always wrong. It's not always putting her on a pedestal to express in real practical ways your love for another person. When you read the Song of Solomon, you read a whole book in the Bible about that expression, words and poetry and actions. And I think the Song of Solomon speaks to a lot of different levels, but clearly it speaks to, you know, a human relationship between a man and a woman, and they're very expressive about it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always mean that there is, you know, there is a problem or there's an imbalance. I do think that a guy can easily put a woman on a pedestal and a woman can do the same thing. And yes, you need to be careful of that. But at the same time, these kind of ways of expressing ourselves are, you know, those are sometimes the only way to do it. We got to say it somehow. And sometimes that's going to be through a little gift, or sometimes through a little note, or sometimes through something that we might say, oh, that's a very romantic thing. But that's okay. God created all that emotion and all of those feelings. And I, you know, my concern would be that someone would base everything on that, and when he or she is not writing me notes or not writing my name in the sand, then he or she is not loving me. That would be my greater concern, that someone would think that.
Right.
But I would say, you know, it all boils down to the specific people and relationship that we're talking about. Now, it could be that this is a girl that just says, you know, that sort of stuff doesn't do anything for me. And if that's the case, wonderful. Say that to the guy. Let him know what does communicate to you, because he has these feelings and he wants to, you to know about them. So how do you want to hear him? How do you want him to communicate that?
Yeah.
You know, if it bugs you that he brings you flowers and you just think, man, that's just a waste of money, well, tell him what you would respond to. That's all just a part of communication. But, I don't think it's always a part of the guy glorifying the girl or the girl glorifying the guy. It can be, but not always.
Yeah. I think it's a good example of where to have other people, trusted mentors and guides in your relationship or in the process of your relationship, is good too, because they can help speak into your life as to whether or not, you know, I know it's often a problem in a dating situation where you become exclusive and all of a sudden all your friends are out the window, your relationship with God's out the window, and you do become obsessed with this person. But if you have others around you who are ensuring that you're in the Word of God, that you are looking at this, you know, through a lens of biblical faith, that you are pursuing His will in this situation, I think that these expressions to the other person are totally healthy. I mean, I think others can kind of help you put an objective lens on this and
say, you know, the phrase I always think of is things that are done in the right spirit.
Right.
And when they're done in the right spirit, then I think that's probably an acceptable thing. I think that almost anything can be done in the wrong spirit. So you have one guy who does the note and it's in the right spirit, and another guy doing the stuff and it's in the wrong spirit. And you just got to make sure that what you're doing is the right spirit.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you very much, John, for weighing in on that.
You bet. My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, everyone, we want you to write to us, editor@boundless.org, with your question to be addressed on a future show. Hopefully this one has been helpful to you as well as to the young woman who wrote it. And you can find all of our Boundless Answers archives there at boundless.org, and you can search for them by topic or by author. And also these inbox questions are searchable on the site as well as they come out of the podcast. So make sure that you're following the things that have been said in the past, as well as submitting your new questions. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.